Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, the first podcast for 2015, and I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Appropriately, we are talking about implementing your New Year's resolutions. I wrote an article which appeared in December and which you can find at drhoffman.com. It's also on Facebook and on Twitter, which talks about the top 10 resolutions that you can implement that are achievable in 2015. And I lamented in that article that the vast majority of resolutions that people undertake are unrealistic and improperly formulated, and that's why they fail. And that's why I'm talking today to our guest, who's Carolyn Arnold. She wrote a book called Small Move, Big Change, and she emphasizes micro resolutions. Carolyn's been a technology leader on Wall Street. She was part and parcel of the Google IPO, and she's now managing director at Goldman Sachs in New York City. And she has some fabulous insights about how to properly formulate and follow through on our resolutions. And I'm focusing on her chapter on diet and resolution. It's a great chapter. And you talk about various ways to deal with it. And it's not a matter of, you know, some sweeping revolution. I'm going to eat healthy. That you're not going to get there. But chunk it for us, break it down for us. What are some of the things that you recommend people target with their micro resolutions when it comes to diet and nutrition?
Okay, well, first of all, it's really great to know that the new weight loss models show that for every 100 calories you can cut, you'll lose 10 pounds over 3 years, with half of it coming in the first year. So what I did is I started with where I was. And that's what I recommend. What do you do today, and pick one or two things to do differently that you feel you can sustain forever? That could be having a very good breakfast, a breakfast before you leave home. Usually when you get breakfast on the run, you're more likely to get something like a muffin or a Danish or, you know, something, not as nutritious as if you actually planned something and had it at home. Or you can try to do it when you come to work. So one thing is a very good breakfast, and the earlier you eat it, now also finding out the earlier you eat, the better. So the earlier your breakfast, the earlier your lunch, you know, letting your lunch slip to 2 o'clock, et cetera, is another thing that I think people think, well, I went a long time without eating, but it actually can sort of screw up, the way your body processes.
Right. Then you want to eat like a house on fire. You know, from my standpoint as a complementary physician, I often see people who have blood sugar issues. And there's nothing like a case of hypoglycemia when your blood sugar crashes to make you ravenous and make some really poor food choices. So you kind of want to eat defensively and, you know, have that breakfast, even though maybe you're not starving. And another way that you talk about having a big breakfast in the morning is don't eat so late at night, because if you eat a big meal,
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you're not hungry for breakfast, probably because you ate another meal between 8 and 10 p.m.
Yeah.
You know, that was a huge one for me. I stopped eating after dinner. I just never think about it anymore. And I used to make dinner, and then I'd do something, and I'd sit down and watch TV, and I immediately think of what's in the kitchen that I can nosh on. I mean, I just got rid of it. And what really has worked for me is, and it's different for people. Some people are snackers. Some people go to bars. Some people have a real sweet tooth. Some people like salty potato chips. You have to go with kind of who you are and figure out what at the margin can contract to get, you know, let's say 100 repeatable calories out. Now, remember, you don't really want to be counting calories during the day, because that's that decision-making thing and that trade-off thing. You say, okay, well, I'm going to eat this piece of cake, but I won't eat dinner. You know, don't do that. Like, most of us are pretty, eat something according to a schedule. You know, we eat a certain kind of breakfast, a certain kind of lunch, a certain kind of dinner, and we snack a certain way. If you drink two beers when you come home with potato chips, maybe you're going to drink a beer and a half. Or maybe you're going to eat pickles instead of potato chips. That could be a resolution. If you're someone who generally goes to the gym and then you visit the smoothie bar afterwards, you burnt 300 calories at the gym, but the smoothie's like 500 calories.
That's another false equivalence. You know, people look at the machines. The machine says, well, you burned off 350 calories. Well, great. That means I can have a big muffin. No, not such a great idea.
Right. Whatever it is that, you know, is kind of something that you do every day – that you can make a change in that's going to be a difference. If you don't eat any fruit, I would say I wouldn't try to cut anything. I would just try to eat fruit. If your diet is poor, I would say the first thing is not to put the pressure on yourself to eat less, but to make some of these substitutions, you know, whether it's, you know, oatmeal and fruit in the morning instead of, you know, toast and butter, whether it's, you know, if you took the, if you eat a sandwich every day for lunch and you took the top piece of bread off, you've done it. You've saved 100 calories. And I just made those choices one or two at a time until, you know, I had lost 20 pounds. And in doing so, I was able to sort of shop for those changes that I could live with and sustain forever. And it's been pretty easy to keep it off. And I watch it carefully. And if I decide that, you know, I've got another 5 pounds I could lose, that I want to lose it, I know I'm starting with where I am and I'm going to be giving up or making a change to what I do now. So
I noticed the phone is ringing in the background. Please don't tell us that the euro is crashing and that you have to get off this conversation, because I know you have a you have an exalted position there.
For the phone ringing, but I'm sure I think the euro already is the lowest it's been in 9 years.
Hey, let's all go to Europe. let's go to Greece and buy an island.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's interesting is we have never, this is the first time we've ever spoken, you know, we arranged this via email, and then this is the first time we've actually had a conversation. But it's so interesting how many of your suggestions, parallel suggestions that I made in my top 10 New Year's resolutions. You talk about sleep and the importance of sleep. You talk about the importance of not eating past a certain time. One of my resolutions was sleep 7. Make sure you sleep at least 7 hours per night. That's a resolution that's tangible and achievable. Another is fast 14, which is stop eating at a certain time and don't eat until a certain time in the morning. It turns out the science of intermittent fasting is showing us that this really helps people's immune systems. It helps to jumpstart the metabolism. It's good to give the body and the digestive system a rest.
Absolutely. I think of all the things, if you can make one resolution, I would get more sleep. Sleep solves everything. You know, it's what restores your willpower and restores your ego, really. And now there's science that shows that there's a couple of hormones that only get balanced if you sleep at least 7 hours. And those are the hormones that regulate appetite and your sense of satiation. So basically, when you don't sleep enough, you feel hungry all day, and nothing you eat satisfies you. To the point you made, if you can leave off eating after dinner, or let's say by 9 o'clock, you'll sleep better because you won't be digesting all that food. They have shown that food that you eat out of, you know, what are natural waking hours does get metabolized differently and causes a greater weight gain, and you'll avoid that. You'll wake up hungry for breakfast. It sort of sets you up for that, you know, kind of great thing where you're hungry for breakfast, you eat a real breakfast, and then you're not hungry till lunch. And that business of aligning appetite with meals was a big one for me. I would often snack a lot in the afternoon because I'd be tired because I hadn't had enough sleep. You know, if you want a snack in the afternoon and you don't have a hunger pang, you're not hungry. You're tired. You're looking for energy.
Like a quick energy jolt, yeah.
Right. And so getting more sleep really helped me avoid that. And actually investing in the notion of being hungry at mealtime, which I did with a micro resolution, which was really just a message to myself. When I was hungry in the afternoon for something real, I would sort of caution myself not to like go whole hog and eat too much by telling myself I enjoy dinner so much more when I'm hungry for it. Because so often I come home and I make the family meal and I want it to be something we'd all enjoy. And I wasn't hungry for it because I would start eating at 3 and eat all the way till 5, one thing after another. And then by the time I got home and made dinner, I just wasn't that hungry. Now I really love to be hungry for meals. I enjoy it more. It satisfies me more. And that's kind of always in the, you know, always now part of the way I think about what I prefer. That's one of the things, the big tricks in this business of changing habit. It isn't just that it changes your habit, it changes your preference over time. Not right away. So, you know, if you learn to eat strawberries, let's say, instead of ice cream, for a long time you probably have that little voice in your head telling you, you know, you'd really rather have that ice cream. At a certain point, it goes away and you'd really rather just have the strawberries. we identify ourselves through our habits. It's like, oh, I'm such a slob. I'm a spendthrift, you know. I'm lazy. And we make these identifications even when they're negative. And so when you work your way out of some of those things with habits, it sometimes takes a little while for the identity piece to catch up. But catch up it does, and then you get another boost because you think of yourself not as a slob, but as somebody neat enough to hang up their clothes and make their bed, and you think of yourself in a different way.
Right. You can turn a vicious cycle into a helpful spiral of every day and every way I'm getting better and better.
Right. A virtuous circle, right, where every change that you make, you know, sort of motivates the next good change. Not because, you know, and the kind of adventure of changing. You know, so much of self-improvement ends up feeling like drudgery to people, like this horrible punitive thing they have to do because they weren't good in the past. Now they have to suffer. If you can reverse that and say, it's exciting to change. It's a real thrill when you realize you've changed permanently. A real thrill. When you realize, for me, when I realize I would really rather walk to work than take the train. When I turn around and make my bed and it's made. When I put everything back in my medicine chest that used to sit out by my sink. When I make dinner without eating anything and then sit down with full appetite. I like that better. But you have to give yourself an experience that's different in order to learn that it is your preference. And when you try to change all your experiences at once, wake up the next day and act like a thin person, all that happens is you put yourself on tilt and you can't enjoy any of that change. But if you can really target change, you can say, that's the change I shopped for. I could have picked any one or two changes to do at one time. I picked that, I targeted it, and now I'm doing it, and now I'm getting the benefit from it. It's a real lift to know that you're not, you know, destined to always keep doing the same things you've always done.
What, you know, one of the resolutions that I think a lot of people are making in 2015, because now with new findings about diet, more and more people are making the resolution in 2015, I'm going to cut out carbs. And right. That's such a vague resolution that that's doomed to failure because there's a lot of powerful physiologic mechanisms that propel us mm-hmm. towards carbs. But you actually tackled that in a micro-resolution fashion. Tell us about how you approach that, because there's an interesting discussion in your diet and nutrition section about how you tackle that particular issue.
Well, you know, there's carbs and then there's carbs, right? I think the thing that's really shocking is if you look at your diet, you can see how much of it is white flour. You know, it's not just white bread. It's cereal, it's pizza, it's pretzels, there's pasta, there's Twizzlers. By the time, you know, even Twizzlers, which are licorice, have wheat in them. Everything has white flour in it. And when you sort of total that up, it's the majority of your calories. And it's a very fast burning, at least for me, when I totaled up, it was the majority of my calories. It's a very fast burning, low nutrient sort of food. So it isn't that, I mean, I love pasta, couldn't live without it. But what I did was I sort of reformed my diet by making substitutions for what were the really weak carbs. I mean, if I want sugar, I want sugar. If I want a piece of chocolate, I want that. But not to spend that sort of margin for kind of sweets on things that are foods that look like food but are really sweet. So white bread is really just like sugar by the time you've eaten it. So crackers, all those things, taking a look at cakes, cookies, all of that, and see, can I make substitutions with something more nutritious and delicious and narrow down how much of my diet is this kind of fast-burning carb?
And, you know, as I sometimes suggest to my patients, eat as if the flour mill had never been invented. And that's a concept that
right.
they start to look at food in a different way, that, you know, wow, this is actually a relatively new historical innovation. Our bodies were maybe not designed for it. And I'm not saying, you know, be absolute about it, because absolute resolutions sometimes are doomed to failure. But be conscious and right. introduce that, that moment of reflection and awareness when you make a food choice.
Yeah, I mean, I always used to have some bread thing for breakfast, and then I switched to oatmeal, and it was like a very conscious choice, and I didn't like it as much at first, but to that point of preference, now I love it. I can't wait to get my oatmeal with fruit and nuts, and it does, you do feel different. It's like your body, is an engine, and the better that you, you know, it's combusting things all day on your behalf, and the better stoked you can make that engine, the better it combusts, the more efficient it is, the more steady your energy is. I don't get all those crazy slumps. And, you know, I'm not pure. I do love the occasional sweet thing. I do like to, you know, have my indulgences. But I, to your point, the idea is that my basic diet, you know, is my nutritional baseline diet is sound. Then if I'm going to add something to it that's sweet, I'm not basically crowding out nutrition to have a treat. I've already taken care of my nutrition through better eating at my meal, which is delicious. I mean, everything I eat, I love.
And that's important, because if it's a drudge, you know, then it's not going to work either. So the book is, of course, not just about diet and nutrition. There's a substantial chapter about that, because it's an important part of the resolutions that we make at New Year's. But there's chapters on sleep, fitness, clutter, I like that, relationships, spending, that's a good one, punctuality, that's key, and organization. And coming to us from a person who's an expert in the business world and, you know, is just a regular person who's coped with all these various challenges in your personal life, it's a great book. It's a great way to start off 2015. So I recommend it very highly. The book is Small Move, Big Change, Using Micro Resolutions to Transform Your Life Permanently, by Carolyn Arnold. Carolyn, so what's our call to action in terms of this book? Is there a website as well for more information?
There is. So you can go to smallmovebigchange.com. I have a Facebook page, Small Move Big Change. Obviously, I'm on Twitter, Caroline L. Arnold. The book is on, you know, all the major outlets and in bookstores. So I really appreciate your listeners taking the time to check it out.
Well, absolutely. I recommend it very highly. It's going to be a great way for you to, you know, it's a time of year where, you know, it's a teachable moment. So grab the inspiration while you can, because pretty soon our resolve will fail as our lives get busy in February and March. And the opportunity to create positive change in your life may be very, very evanescent indeed. So make the change now. Make those micro resolutions and make them stick. Thanks very much for joining us, Carolyn Arnold.
Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and a very happy new year to all of you, and much success in implementing your resolutions. Thanks for joining us.